Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And that's right. We welcome you back with Shreyas Lada, our KU insider, joining us here on the program. Shreyas, we appreciate it as KU gets into, we'll call it, we'll be hyperbolic, biggest game of the year on the road at number 2, Iowa State. They've played a lot of big ones this year. They're 6-point dogs, though, on the road. That doesn't happen a lot to KU, but I think we all agree with it. We all understand why it is. Iowa State's really good. How pumped up are you for this one tonight?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I think it'll be a really big test, I think, for KU in the sense that, they've had 2 straight road victories against some teams that are good, but not great. You know, I think Cincinnati is a great defense, but they were flawed offensively, and we saw that firsthand on Sunday, mostly to Kansas's defense, but Cincinnati just could not put the ball in the bucket. And UCF obviously was not that great of a team, but Kansas dominated that game. Hilton Coliseum is tough to play at. It's probably the toughest environment on the road, I think, for Kansas outside of playing at home for opposing teams at Allen Fieldhouse. I'm really curious to see kind of how it goes because Kansas has looked really, really good defensively. Been very impressed since Shaquille Moore has been in the lineup. They haven't quite found their offensive footing yet. So I'm curious to see if they can turn it around against a team that's elite on both ends.
What a bizarre game over the weekend against Cincinnati, Shreyas. The first time in the Bill Self era in over 20 years that one of his KU teams scored under 55 points and won a game. And I know that, you know, from an offensive point of view, it was ugly for both teams. But again, it just strengthens this narrative that defense has got to be the identity of this team. And I know Cincinnati couldn't shoot, but also they were stopped and suffocated at a lot of steps, a lot of stretches there in the second half.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think Hunter Dickinson said it best. A Bill Self-led team should be a defensive team. And I think, you know, the idea that defense travels is correct. I know it's a little bit of an exaggerated effect, but the idea is, you know, if you're putting effort on defense, a lot of times, even if the offense is not good, you can turn it around with, you know, turnovers created and, you know, fast break opportunities and all that. I think KU's offense is going to be up and down throughout the season. I'm not sure if you can quite rely on it game in, game out, but the defense should be something it takes pride in. I mentioned this on Saturday. I've been on the KU beat for now for 3 years on the basketball beat. I think this is the best defense they've had out of the 3 seasons that I've covered them, bar none. They look really, really good. They look locked in. They look focused. I think Shaquille Moore has made them even more dangerous defensively. And it gives them another point guard alongside DeJuan Harris to kind of take care of the ball. I think I was really impressed with, you know, that grinded out victory. It was not a fun game to watch. I think I mentioned it on Twitter. I was like, I really hope there's no kid watching basketball for the first time. This is the first game they ever watched because it was tough.
Okay, so here's, we all know and we all agree, KU's defense will, you know, if we had to draw up a game plan, it'll be a defensive-led performance that leads them to a win over Iowa State. I think we all know that, understand that, believe that. My question in it, though, Shreyas, is what happens if it's not a dominant defensive performance? I kind of look at this, another play on this is, what if they can't just shut them down? Are they capable in an individual game like this of getting into a track meet if they need to? I think the only real time we've seen that against a quality opponent is North Carolina, maybe. But there is a part of me that's curious on whether or not, I know we don't want to play that way, but can they play that way if they have to play that way?
So I think it's going to be interesting because Iowa State is a top 10 defense in the nation through adjusted defense efficiency, like Kansas is. One of the curious things about Iowa State, though, is they don't shoot a lot of threes. It's kind of like Kansas is in that realm. They don't make a ton of threes. I mean, I think they're like 81 in the country in percentage, which is okay. It's not horrible. It's not amazing. It's kind of bang on average. Kansas is kind of in that same realm. So I'm curious if this is the game where they kind of shoot the lid off the basket and if they can't play defense. And there's a, you know, they, I think they could keep up with Iowa State just because Iowa State is a team that doesn't take a lot of threes. If you sit there and told me Iowa State is in like top 100 in 3-point percentage and top 100 in 3-point rate, then I would say I don't think they could keep up with Iowa State. But because Iowa State's not a team built around 3-point shooting, I think, you know, in a shootout or in a high scoring game, I think Kansas can keep up. I think it just depends on the opponent and their ability to shoot threes and not threes, because Kansas has been too inconsistent on that realm for me to definitively say game in, game out, that they can trust their offense.
Shreyas, if we are talking about all of the newcomers, the acquisitions this year on this roster, at this point, I don't know if many people or anybody for that matter would say that the two most impactful players are Shaquille Moore and Zeke Mayo. I mean, everybody had looked at Rylan Griffin and looked at AJ Storr, like their accolades and the teams they played for before and the NIL money and like all of that. But Shaquille Moore defensively and Zeke Mayo offensively have been the difference makers as far as the newcomers are concerned.
Yeah, I think they've been by far the best transfers. I think Rylan continues to get a little better, which is good. I think that's big. AJ Storr, I don't know what's going on. I'm going to be honest. Yeah. It seems like there's, you know, Bill, the way he talks about him is like, and this is, I'll put this in the nice way possible. He talks about him like he's a walk-on sometimes, I feel like. You know, he talked about, oh, he's done some good things defensively. AJ Storr averaged 16 points per game for Wisconsin last year. What are we doing here? Come on now. Okay, if this is where we're at, where he's done some good things defensively and he's the eighth, ninth man in the rotation, no matter what you say right now, it has been an abject failure, his tenure at Kansas at this point. Maybe he could turn around. Maybe he couldn't. I have no idea. But what we thought AJ Storr was going to bring to this team, he has clearly not brought. And Zeke Mayo was, I would arguably say, the best offensive player on this team.
Sure.
You know?
And it's, isn't that okay? Like, isn't it okay that Zeke Mayo is bringing more than you thought he would, and AJ Storr's not bringing as much, as long as the sum of all parts gets you to where you needed to be? And I think Zeke Mayo's absolutely done that. What difference does it make if it was AJ Storr in the lineup helping lead the way offensively when it's not Dickinson or it's Zeke Mayo? I don't care as much, because okay, he didn't work out, but somebody else is contributing far more than you thought he would, so it sort of balances out there.
Yeah, no, I agree with that sentiment. I think the only worry that I have is if Zeke has an off game, who's the third guy that could sit there and say, give me some buckets. I asked this question at the press conference Thursday, and I don't think, or not Thursday, I think it was Tuesday. Bill quite understood what I was asking, but something that I had noticed, and we talked so much about KJ Adams throughout this year, his scoring is down by 4 points compared to last year. His efficiency is like 51% versus 60. He was really, really good at scoring last year, being that third guy on that team. I was curious in that sense if it was a roster thing this year where he doesn't need to score more, or he's just not getting in the position to score as much as he did. I didn't really get a great definitive answer. I mean, Bill basically said his role isn't different from last year. I was like, okay, then why is he not anywhere near as efficient as he was last year or the year before? It's not like spacing was good last year, especially when Kevin was hurt. And this is my one kind of small worry with this Kansas team, is who is the de facto third scorer? Who is the guy, if Hunter Dickinson's in foul trouble or Zeke Mayo is not making buckets, that can step up and give them some scoring relief. I think there's a couple of guys that could do it, but I haven't consistently seen it from anybody. And I think last year, the year before, you'd probably say KJ Adams was the third or fourth guy. Well, KJ Adams hasn't been consistent on the scoring end. And there's going to be games where Zeke Mayo shut down or Hunter Dickinson's in foul trouble. I bet you it'll happen in the tournament at least once if they make a deep run. Somebody else has got to step up. And that's when the AJ Storr thing comes in. That's when the Rylan Griffin thing comes in. That's when Diggy Hoyt comes in. All these guys, you know, are going to have some crazy games, or not crazy games, but at least games where they're scoring 15 plus points a game to kind of take them out of the trenches in that scenario.
Are you seeing enough right now in a limited amount of time on the court together where the Jayhawks should lean into more of Hunter Dickinson and Flory Badunga on the court at the same time?
Yeah, I think I'm very pro Flory Badunga playing more minutes. I think, and I've been that for a long time. I think he's the most talented freshman they've had in a very long time. He's as talented as what Grady was for them a couple of years ago, in just different ways. I think he's just a defensive monster. It seems like he's getting better on both ends, game in, game out. And honestly, I'll say this point blank, I'm excited to see him start next year. I think what they're going to have with him on the court next year is going to be a really different team than what they have with Hunter Dickinson, KJ Adams, and DeJuan Harris. That core three being gone and Flory, and they brought in all these guys who are supposed to be, you know, one and done guys or NBA guys or whatever. I think could be really, really fun to watch, even if there's growing pains. And I think Flory should be playing 20, 25 minutes a game, honestly, depending on the matchup. I think he makes everyone's life easier, and he keeps Hunter well-rested. He keeps KJ in a better position to play the minutes he needs to play.
Not to put the cart before the horse, though, because it is the Hunter Dickinson team, and they'll go as far as he takes them. What should we expect out of him in a game like this? Are we looking at a game that features him solely? I mean, don't they need to start every game that way, right, to feed him and see where that goes?
Yeah, I think you've got to be aggressive. I wrote about it in my scouting preview. They have to basically come out there in the sense and build a lead. You need to basically get a big enough lead that you have to change the shot diet of Iowa State and force them to take more three-pointers, because that's the way you win the game, right? And then if the game is relying on Kansas's defense versus Iowa State's offense, I would take Kansas's defense most times in that bet. You know, like, you know, I think Kansas's defense is really, really good. I think Iowa State's offense is good. I don't think they're as good as maybe some other teams they've played this year. And I think it starts with Hunter Dickinson being aggressive from the get-go, establishing a presence in the paint, and enforcing the Iowa State big men to kind of defend him up front and be in front of him, and either defend him well and because he's going to score a bucket, or defend him and force him, get fouled. I think he needs to do that. I think him being aggressive really opens up KB's offense. They need to play inside out, and then it'll open up three-pointers for guys like Zeke Mayo and Rylan Griffin.
It's a 6 p.m. tip on ESPN2. Hate that it's not the late game. Can we swap that in, Cincinnati, Colorado or something, and get it in the late window? I don't even know what the late window game is, but it's not going to be as good. I don't like 6 o'clock tips. But here we are. This is what we've got. We'll deal with it. Shreyas, we appreciate it. Follow Shreyas on social media at SHRE98. And of course, find all his work at the Kansas City Star. Thanks, Shreyas.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Good stuff there. Really good stuff. If you missed any of it, go back and listen on the Odyssey app, because that's a really good breakdown of what Iowa State brings, how it sort of lines up with what KU brings. Check it out, Odyssey app. You can download that. I'm fired up for it, and I'm not fired up that it's a 6 p.m. tip. Like, we have to be able to flex that stuff out. That game should not be a 6 p.m. tip tonight.
I'm just excited about it because I don't want to stay up late tonight, so I'm good with getting it out of the way and then going to bed.
I cannot get to the start of games at 6 o'clock. Yeah, I can't.
I'm excited about it, though.
It's impossible. I'm fired up for it. This, to me, it's the most fun game we've had yet this college basketball season, especially for us in this part of the world. 6-point dogs tonight for KU. You touching any of that?
I'm going to stay away. I'm not convinced about their offense yet.
I don't know what to expect tonight. I said that off the top. I'm staying away too. All right, we'll come back. More Sports Daily right after this.
do? I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. You can tune into KFH tonight for Butler basketball, the 11th-ranked Grizzlies hosting Cloud County. Butler basketball at 7:15 tonight right here on 97.5 and 1240 KFH, available for free online at kfhradio.com or, of course, on the free Odyssey app. Welcome back in, everybody. Thanks to those watching us on our video streams right now. You can leave us your comments there, Facebook, YouTube, X, and 12 News Connected. Glad to be able to get in touch with you. We've got home safety tips coming from the YouTube feed right now that I really appreciate. Seth keeping me from cracking my concrete. I'm so frustrated at the ice, I'm ready to go take a sledgehammer to it. But Seth warns me not to do that. And so I won't. And I'll try to be patient. Not one of my great skills with this ice. I'm ready for it to be gone, and I'm ready to get to the pool as quick as I can. Tommy, welcome back in here. It's sort of the eve before the storm for the Chiefs. Anticipation building. I was talking in the office yesterday. I am having a hard time finding the path for the Texans in this one. It's now 8.5 points to the Chiefs. I don't know about that line. That's a big line. But I really like the Chiefs in this game. And it's kind of starting to make me nervous a little bit for the Chiefs, that it feels like this is a game they should win. I don't want to say easily. That's a stupid thing to say, but it just feels like a really, really good matchup for the Chiefs.
The bottom line is going to be, you know, how can the Chiefs really neutralize the pass rush from Houston? Because one thing that the Texans have going for them is that they just faced the Chiefs a couple of weeks ago, and they know that, you know, there are some areas that are going to be susceptible on that offensive line. So it's really going to be that chess match, I think, about how can Kansas City make sure that Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter can't get to Patrick Mahomes. We talked about it yesterday, the quick strike passes, leaning on the running game. You know, really, Patrick Mahomes can't hold on to the ball for long. You know, he's not going to have a lot of time, I wouldn't think, to be able to let a lot of big plays develop downfield. I don't think they're going to call a lot of those plays downfield just because you've got two guys on both edges for Houston. They can get after you. And so they're going to have to do a really good job, I think, of making sure that they can neutralize that, because that was an area that Houston did really well last week when they played the Chargers.
So I want to take you through a stretch. We're talking about Houston's pass rush, and it is very, you know, I think it's pretty clear that is the great danger of this game for the Chiefs. So I've got it up by game this year of sacks allowed. And this doesn't take into consideration pressures, just sacks. And so it's not like, it's not foolproof, because we know Mahomes is pretty good at avoiding sacks, but it gives us some idea of what I'm thinking on this. So if you go back to the Buccaneers game, right? And that's, so we'll go back there basically since November. Here are the sacks allowed through a stretch. 4, 4, 2, 5, 5, and 3. And the 3 was the Chargers. Mixed in there is the Buffalo loss. Since then, though, from December 15th, their last 3 real games, I'm gonna take out the Denver game, in which they allowed 5 sacks, because it's, you know, it's irrelevant, really. 0, 1, and 0. It's no surprise, Tommy, that those are the 3 games where, you know, where we saw the Chiefs sort of eke by and squeak out all these games in the wacky ways that they did it. Well, that stopped in that game against the Browns, right? And 2 of those teams, the Texans and the Steelers, were playoff teams. All 3 of those teams featured dynamic pass rushers. And they allowed 0, 1, and 0 sacks in those games, which led to a 14-8 and a 19-point win. It's pretty clear what the difference for the Chiefs has been lately is that they're not giving up sacks. What now? Is that because their offensive line all of a sudden figured it out and became this dynamic offensive line? Of course it's not. Now, Joe Tooney moving over did have something to do with that. That's about the timing and so that's been better. But the bigger progress has been the way that they play offense. We have screamed from the rooftops all year, run the ball, because Mahomes is getting killed back there. Well, they haven't They've done that more. They have done that more. Now with Isaiah Pacheco back, they've, you know, maybe not to the level they were last year, but they are running the ball a little bit more, but they're getting it out of hand quickly and getting his, you know, getting his playmakers back has helped. The evolution of Xavier Worthy is not that far off, Tommy, from that exact same timeline. His ability now to become a part of that quick strike offense, which, oh, by the way, was exactly what Rashi Rice did last year to help this offense. Happened a little bit later for Worthy, but he's doing the same thing for the offense. And so, like, all of those things line up now to where this top absolute, no doubt about it, number one liability for the Chiefs this year thing has been neutralized to some degree now because they've redesigned the way they play offense. I don't anticipate that changing. Does that guarantee them wins against team with good pass rushes? No, because Houston just needs one big play through a pass rush to force a turnover. You're still nervous about it, but far less so than we were a month ago. It's been a while since the Chiefs have played.
And you know, it's obviously Xavier Worthy coming along, but it's having the sure hands of DeAndre Hopkins when you need a third down. You've got a couple options. You can go to Travis Kelce. You can go to DeAndre Hopkins, and there's that level of trust from both of those guys that, you know, are in place, which is huge. But then don't discount Hollywood Brown being able to be healthy in the playoffs. We saw him sort of come on the last couple of weeks of the season, and it was the Chiefs getting him ramped back up to game speed, all of that. I anticipate he'll be let loose starting this weekend and throughout the playoffs. I mean, that's why
he, I think this is let loose. I think we thought of him, and I did this too, and I do think that's the way it started. His role initially this year, before Rashi Rice's situation, you know, we had some clarity there before the Hollywood Brown injury, before everything, was going to be this team's deep threat as he developed as a rookie. Well, guess what? Like, he didn't have a chance to do that because, and they tried early and it was fine, but that's not ultimately what he's been, and it's made him a better player.
I mean, Hollywood Brown being let loose, because we saw Hollywood Brown come back the last couple of weeks of the season and get sprinkled in, get worked into the offense, get up to game speed, like all of that. And I think it's full go. Like, it's full go with what Hollywood Brown can do. I totally agree with you. It's been full speed ahead for Xavier Worthy over the last, I don't know, 6 weeks or so.
But in a different role, role than we anticipated for him. I think ultimately that was always a role that he could have in the league. Just didn't think it was coming right now. Like, the safety valve almost, or the design in place. But they've done that. And now, if you think about the Hollywood Brown effect, and we really haven't even had a chance to see him at full go, so that will be fascinating. That opens things up. And again, I've said this before, I said it yesterday. I think Travis Kelce is the player that's really unlocked here in the postseason. I think it's going to be Kelce that explodes out here, which is great news. If the major concern for me has shifted away from the offensive line, it's still a concern, but maybe not my major concern. My major concern becomes red zone offense. Can the Chiefs put the ball in the end zone at a high clip? And that's where I'm really interested to see Hollywood Brown's effect. Can he give that? Like, what can they do in the red zone now to be a little more effective there to turn field goals into touchdowns? Because if they do that, like, if they're not settling for field goals, which is a great thing to have in your back pocket, I don't want to discount that, as many big kicks in the postseason as Harrison Butker's made. But if you can convert those at a higher clip than you did in the regular season into touchdowns, remember the Chiefs, they never did get to 30 points, right? No, they got close. They got 29 against Pittsburgh. They never went north of 30. But it feels like they're at a position where they ought to be able to do that now. But it's not going to happen if they can't convert some field goals into touchdowns. Will they be pressured to do that? That becomes more of a question of the defense. Jalen Watson was back at practice yesterday. You know, they're not saying that Watson will play. They're saying he looks good. I have a sneaky feeling, Tommy, that Watson's probably going to play. I think he may be out there. And I just, like, again, this is, I don't want to be overly optimistic about the Chiefs, but man, I'm feeling good about them right now. Remember how much better the defense was before the Watson injury?
Oh, I mean, like I remember going into the season and like, man, this defense is elite. Like, it's one of the best defenses in the league.
you go back to the beginning of the season with Mitch, when Mitch Holthus said, hey, guys, I think they got a chance to be better. And I'm like, you're nuts. You're crazy. I can't believe you just said that. And then they kind of were out of the gates. And then Watson gets hurt and it really sort of unraveled for them. Well, I think he's going to be back. He's practicing. They're not saying, but they're saying like it's been a little like coy. So I think he could be back. And I think if he is, now you're looking at that too. And, you know, we get you. And that's where, so back to the original point of I'm having a hard time finding Houston's path here. This is in relation to Houston. Now, if you get to Baltimore or Buffalo, at the end of the day, those are also two very good and very complete teams, just like the Chiefs are. So who knows what happens there? But I don't think Houston is as complete as those three teams. I think they got a good coach. They got a good quarterback. They've got some dynamic pass rushers, and they can make noise that way. But it's going to take Chiefs mistakes or the Chiefs beating themselves. I don't think the Texans are capable of beating the best version of the Chiefs at Arrowhead in the postseason.
Texans weren't able to beat him a few weeks ago, you know, when they played. And that was a Chiefs team that had, you know, definitely injury concerns at that time. I was trying to think back when they played the Texans. When was that? Middle of December or right before Christmas, that Saturday game. Wasn't that coming off of Patrick Mahomes injuring his ankles? Like, wasn't he like not at 100% like full speed, you know, in that game? I was trying to think back to when that was. You've got, you know, a much healthier version of Kansas City in this matchup this time around with the Texans than you had right before Christmas. So I do think that, you know, is part of it. They're rested for sure. You know, obviously the Chiefs were caught in a Saturday game, the three-game stretch in 11 days when they played Houston before. And you know, Houston was down a little bit too at that point. And now, and still are. Like, you're dealing with no Steph Diggs. You're dealing with no Tank Dell. You know, they're injured. I think that really for the Texans, what we saw in the matchup against the Chargers, C.J. Stroud didn't make a ton of mistakes, which he has been making more of them in his sophomore season than he did his rookie year. But he didn't make a lot of mistakes in that wild card game. And then also they really leaned on Joe Mixon. And even when the Chiefs had struggled defensively this season, they were still always really good against the run. And so that's going to be a major part of it too. Like, what can they do to limit Joe Mixon? And that'll be a really good warm-up for if they play Derrick Henry again or if they play James Cook again. They'll play one of those two guys next week if they can beat Houston in the championship game in the AFC. So I think that's going to be obviously another part of it too. The Texans are going to want to lean on Joe Mixon like they did in that wild card round to take a little bit of the pressure off of C.J. Stroud, especially knowing that really he's got Nico Collins and that's about it. It's just going to be a matter of whether or not the Chiefs can shut down Joe Mixon like they've stopped the run basically all season, even without Jalen Watson.
C.J. Stroud is still C.J. Stroud. I know he's thrown more interceptions than he did a year ago. He's also had to force it a little more than he did a year ago because they've had so many injuries at wide receiver. If you go back to the beginning of the year before they started losing a lot of those guys, he was really, really, really good. Really good. And so, like, all of this makes me a little bit nervous because it does feel like the Chiefs are like near perfectly set up in this moment to go and win this game. Like, everything is coming up Chiefs, and that does make me a little bit nervous. It does. I'll be honest. Like, those are tough spots because the Texans hear that stuff too. And the Chiefs have potentially a rust factor that we won't know about. Can they afford it? If there is a rust factor and it lasts a quarter, can they afford to have that? Right? Can the Texans make a couple of big plays early? You definitely can't have a mistake from Mahomes.
You remember the last time that the Chiefs and Texans played at Arrowhead in the playoffs? That was the game that the Texans went up 24-0 in the first quarter, and then the Chiefs scored four touchdowns in the second quarter to take the lead at halftime.
Was that last year?
No. That was 2019.
Oh, because they played in Houston last
year. Yeah, that was 2019,
I think. Who was the quarterback then? Was that like Matt Schaub? Like, who was that quarter? Who did they go up against there? Was that Deshaun Watson?
That was Deshaun Watson. Yeah, that was Watson at quarterback. And that was the game where the Texans tried to fake punt it at one point, and the Chiefs stopped it. And then they scored, and then they scored four touchdowns in the span of like 7 game minutes. and all of a sudden they had taken the lead. Tyreek was still on that team. Travis Kelce caught a couple of touchdown passes from Mahomes. And then all of a sudden, that was the divisional round at Arrowhead. And so, two different teams entirely at this point. But, you know, the Chiefs were caught off guard, and they were sluggish in that game the last time that the Texans played at Arrowhead in the playoffs. And Kansas City had, at that point, the propensity to score very quickly. So they were able to get back into it. Bill O'Brien was the coach of the Texans then. So it's different for sure. But I just think about that. Like, what happens if they get off to a little bit of a sluggish start, or if they're, you know, it takes a little bit to get back into the rhythm of things after all of that time off? Can they afford to do that against a team like the Texans? Yeah, I think they can.
You don't want to, but
I think they can.
I think they can. I'm glad that they're playing the Texans in the first round. I'm glad. And this is like, I don't even want to say some of the things that pop into my head out loud because it feels jinxy, right? Like, I'm glad they get a tune-up game here. Like, what a stupid thing to say. What a stupid thing to even think, right? But I can guarantee you that's what people are thinking right now. Everyone's thinking about Ravens Bills. Nobody's thinking about Texans. The Chiefs feel like they're in a great spot to go win this game. They are. But it's still a really good team with a good quarterback, dynamic playmakers on defense, one of the more effective running backs in the league this year, and Nico Collins, who has been as good as any individual pass catcher in the league. Again, you like that they can put McDuffie on him. You like that the Chiefs stop the run all the time. You like all of these things, and it makes me really nervous. And it's like, man, it just feels so Chiefs. And Patrick Mahomes has been absolutely lethal in this round of the playoffs throughout his history.
How many times, I'm going to actually pat you on the back and give you some credit, because how many times throughout the course of this season were you like, when something bad would happen, doesn't matter? Like, as long as you get to January and the Chiefs are at full strength in the playoffs with 15-87-95 and Andy Reid on the sideline, does any of it actually really matter?
And it doesn't. Now, it helps that they're completely healthy now.
Sure.
That makes it feel a lot better. But it's the old, I've said it for months now. This team reminds me of the early rendition of the Patriots, has reminded me of it, where you felt like you gave them everything you had and they still somehow beat you. And then at the end of the year, when the dust settles, they're just, there they are. They're just sitting there. And that's what this team's always reminded me of. Well, now they're healthy, right? With the exception of Rashi Rice. But again, we didn't think they'd have DeAndre Hopkins either. So if you swap those dudes out, like, this is basically the version of the Chiefs we thought we'd have at the beginning of the year. I think this offense has a chance to by far be the best offense we've seen from the Chiefs this year, just for the simple fact that they're healthy. They have the Joe Tooney sort of answer to the test a little bit, in that they have a better option, at least at left tackle.
Yeah, something that can at least be manageable, you think? I mean, really, even the running back room is better now than it was at the beginning of the year. A fully healthy Isaiah Pacheco. They didn't have Kareem Hunt at the beginning of the season, and they wouldn't have gotten Kareem Hunt had Isaiah Pacheco not went down with an injury. So they're a better running back team. They're a better offensive team right now, even without Rashi Rice,
I know,
than they were at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I agree with that. No, I mean, Rashi Rice is a great player, but yeah, because of some of the moves they've had to make because of the injuries, it's almost set them up for now as they've made their way through. And of course, it all comes through Arrowhead, and it'll be cold, and those are all advantages, Chiefs. We'll come back. Sri Islada joins us. Help us dig into KU Iowa State. That's next on Sports Daily.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs, or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19-ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester. We've got KU talk coming. Big game against Iowa State. That is coming in our next segment, so stay tuned for that. Looking forward to the conversation with Sharia Slotta, our KU insider. Glad to have you with us here on the program. Thank you to Crestview Country Club for being a part of the show, for being a part of the Sports Daily family here. All kinds of fun stuff coming up there at Crestview as you get into the winter months. You've still got great things happening at the restaurant, at the bar, social events. So here, just a couple examples, Tommy. There's a Welcome Back Casino night in January. There's a Prime Rib night, which I know you're pretty excited about. There's a wine tasting event.
Why am I excited about Prime Rib Night? I'm curious.
Because
about
who's
that.
Not excited okay. about Prime Rib Night? Who's not excited about Prime Rib?
That you're calling me fat or something.
No, okay. I love Prime
Rib. I mean, I love Prime Rib too, but I don't want to be stereotyped as a Prime Rib guy.
Doing a lot of stereotyping today. Film guys.
Yeah.
People that love prime rib. No, that's not an indictment on anybody's physical well-being other than we all love prime rib, right? Who doesn't love prime rib? They're doing a Super Bowl catering so you can get Super Bowl food to go. How about that? All kinds of good stuff. Thanks to Crestview for being a part of the program. We're just a couple movie guys here who love red meat. Is that so bad? Is that so bad? What you listen to, what you catch here on Sports Daily? Film guys and What can we stereotype that film guys eat? Hummus? Film
probably.
Guys with their hummus?
They probably enjoy leeks.
I do love hummus, by the way. Caviar? Go have your caviar yeah. and watch your dumb Oscar movies. We'll sit over here and watch the next blow-em-up action film with some prime rib, and we'll love every second of it. Welcome back into Sports Daily, everybody. They don't know how we get off on these sidebars, but we do. And you can go back and listen to any of them on the Odyssey app if you'd like. Our commentary on the film industry will be on the Odyssey app, downloadable in podcast form for you right after the show. Let's talk, Tommy, just at a bird's eye look here before we dig in deep with Sharia Slotta. I'm excited about the KU game tonight because I don't know what to expect out of the KU game tonight at all. Like, I have no read on it because it is a collision course of styles. We know what both of these teams are really good at when they're at their best, and they, you know, it's like oil and water. Like, they aren't the same team. And so how does that play out in Ames tonight? I honestly and legitimately have no idea what to expect.
One thing that Iowa State is really, really good at, I mean, we know how they can score in droves really quick. And I think that that's part of what's made them so good and why they're one of the top teams in college basketball is not just the fact that they can score, but how quickly they can score. Like they can get points on the board in a flash. And before you know it, it's almost like you've, you know, been hit with a haymaker and, you know, they've put up a bunch of points. I watched a lot of the Texas Tech Iowa State game over the weekend, and to Texas Tech's credit, they threw everything they possibly could at Iowa State in that game. And they played them really well. It took a last second or millisecond shot by Iowa State to tie the game and force it to overtime. And then the Cyclones ultimately won. And it shows the resilience of the Cyclones and what TJ Ulzelberger has built there, that culture in Ames. But credit to Texas Tech for the game plan, and that's kind of the sort of game plan that the Jayhawks are going to have to implement. They're going to have to hit their shots, number one, Kansas is, but then they're going to have to continue on with that just stop down, suffocating defense that we've seen in the second half in the last couple of games for Kansas, but they're going to have to do it from the tip and all the way through tonight.
Yeah, and Dickinson, I saw, is, something he said is it might not be the most aesthetically pleasing type of basketball, but it's what Coach Self would prefer. He wants a team that's tougher, a better defensive team that wants it more. I think we're seeing KU embrace that a little bit, which is good because I think they're going to have to. I have not seen like a full wire-to-wire Iowa State game yet this year. But I know how highly people think of them. There's a lot of chatter that this is Ulzelberger's best team at Iowa State, and we know he's had some really, really good ones. And so I can't wait to see is Hunter Dickinson. How does he hold up in a game like this against a team? Like if I'm Iowa State, I want to run him much as I can run him, right? And then is Florey Badunga going to be able to be on the floor and play meaningful minutes against a team that's as high octane as them? That's the kind of stuff. I don't know whether I think, okay, you can go to Ames and win this kind of, I mean, of course they can. Is it only through a path of kind of gumming it up and keeping it low scoring and doing all those things? That's kind of what I want to know.
You've got to get them out of rhythm. I mean, that because, again, Iowa State plays, obviously, kind of offensive game where they're in that. When they get in that rhythm and they're clicking again, they can put up buckets of points in a really short amount of time. So KU defensively, they've got to jump passing lanes. They've got to be disruptive. They've got to do the different things to try their hardest to get Iowa State out of their offensive rhythm.
But don't you want to see if KU can keep up in a track meet? Like,
no.
Don't you like that test for them? No, I know we don't. I know we don't prefer
no, I don't
them
see
to
that.
Play.
Yeah.
No, but I understand we don't like to see them because they typically don't, right? Their wins, here are their point totals in their, if you go back, you got to go way back here, but their point totals in those wins are lower than, right, than what we're accustomed to. And so, like, that's the path for them. We know that's the path for them. I know that's the path for them. We get on here and say it all the time. Like, they need to be a lower scoring team. They scored a ton against UCF. I don't know how much to make of that one. And then you had Brown, right? Which I think you can sort of take to the side, but it was 74 points in a win against Cincinnati, 54 against Cincinnati, against Arizona State, 74 Arizona State, 54 Cincinnati. And then you had 75 NC State, 75 in the Duke win. They got up there in the North Carolina win, but it feels like that's more of their wheelhouse. But I do want to see just if they can do it. If this game turned into a shootout, what if it's going to take 80 to win this game? I want to see if KU can do it, right? I want to see if they're forced to, if they can play in a game like that. Do they have enough shot makers? Can those guys step into that role and do that? I don't think they want to do that. I don't think if we're drawing up a game plan, that's not the game plan for KU. But you never know what's going to happen in the most meaningful games in a season, especially in the NCAA tournament. Does this team have it in them in a track meet to put it together enough to win a game like this? I'm still curious. They did early in the year. But it's been a long time since we've seen them be able to hang in that kind of environment.
Well, look, this is an Iowa State team that is averaging just over 86 points a game. So, like, again, their offensive prowess is off the chart. They're one of the best offensive teams in college basketball. I put them up with Auburn. I mean, there's a reason why Iowa State is, number two, and Auburn is number one in the nation, because both of those teams can score a bunch of points. So it may very well take 80 points to win the game. There's not a chance that Kansas can limit Iowa State to what they did against Cincinnati. Like, that's an outlier. The defensive effort was phenomenal, sure. But Cincinnati scored 40 points at home over the weekend. Iowa State ain't scoring 40 points in Ames. Like, that's not going to happen. But if Kansas can shave off 10 points off of their average points per game, you know, and get Iowa State to score around, I don't know, in the low 70s, 70 to 75, you know, then you're gonna need a great offensive effort again from the Jayhawks to be able to compete against that. If the defense isn't there for the Jayhawks, like we've seen in the last couple of games for them, then I think Iowa State shouldn't have an issue with getting up to where they average offensively in the game. That's why I say, going back to my original point, we've seen fantastic second half defensive efforts from the Jayhawks, but they're going to need it from the tip tonight.
So Vegas has an implied total, basically an implied score here of 75-69 Iowa State. So it's betting that Iowa State will win a lower scoring game, which is interesting.
It's a credit to Kansas's defense.
Well, I know what I'm saying is, so if you see a 144 and you see a minus six, you're looking at 75-69 as an implied like score of the game. I think if it stays that low, like if the under hits tonight or if it's right at the number, I think KU will win the game. And I think that like lends itself to what we're talking about.
That's why I don't interesting want to see track meet because I don't think that Kansas
no,
will win
I don't want to
an
see,
85-82
I don't want to
game.
See.
Like, I'm not sure that that's the way that it's going
to
be.
Don't misunderstand. I don't want to. I know that that's not the path, the easiest path to a KU victory. There is a part of me, though, that does want to see KU, before we get to the end of this season, tested in that way. Like, tested to keep up in a track meet type of game, because what I don't know for sure, I know their best way to win a game is through their defense. That's any team in college basketball, right? I don't know if it's the only way, and I kind of want to know if it's the only way. Like, must they play that level of defense? Or what happens in a game where you're playing great defense and a team is just hitting all their shots? Which happens. It definitely happens on the road in a big-time conference game late at night. So if they do what they're supposed to, but Iowa State still shoots well, can they still win that game? We'll talk more about it. Shreyas Lada coming up a little later in the hour here. But it is a fascinating game tonight. We'll continue to talk about it on Sports Daily as we make our way through.